stay. And I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. If you're not an Athletic subscriber, please consider joining us today. TheAthletic.com/straightfromthesource will get you in for $3.99 per month. Wild off to a 10-4 start this season. Most road wins in the Western Conference, off to a really quality start. Bounced back from a loss in Vegas the other night with a big victory in Seattle to also avenge last month's loss there. Played really well, and just a really, really cool storyline from that game. Rem Pitlick, in the place where he tested positive for COVID-19 on October 27th, comes back into that building and gets a hat trick, a natural hat trick to boot. And not just like little goals and stuff, like every goal, a highlight reel goal. The first goal, Ryan Hartman beats Carson Soucy to a puck. Rem Pitlick beats Marcus Johansson back to the back post. See a trend there, by the way, two former Wild players. And Ryan Hartman with just an incredible backhanded saucer pass, like 40 feet right onto the tape of Rem Pitlick. Pitlick went on and on and on about how great of a pass that was by Ryan Hartman. And then Ryan Hartman makes two unbelievable plays as well to set up a couple Rem Pitlick breakaway goals. The first one clobbers Jared McCann in the neutral zone, but before he clobbers him, he pokes the puck to Rem Pitlick, and it sure looked like Rem was thinking about going off for a line change there after a long shift. And what was amazing about the goal by Rem Pitlick is that that was a long shift by Pitlick, and yet he just exploded. Like, the guy could just fly with his skating and just scored a beautiful goal. And then later in the second period with 40 seconds left, Ryan Hartman again intercepts a pass, steals it right off the stick of, I think it was Mark Giordano, hits Brandon Duhan with about a 60 to 100-foot headman pass to the far blue line. And then again, he just burst of speed, flies in there and does a carbon copy move, his little fake to the backhand, and then just creates an open net for himself and just puts it right in there. Man, this kid has a ton of skill, a ton of speed. And now you can see why the Wild picked him up off waivers. I remember when the Wild took him off picked him up off waivers on October 5th. I was driving back from the U.S. Women's National Team has their residency here up in Blaine up until the Olympics. So I went up there for a press conference, and I was driving back, and I had to go to Michael's Art to get something reframed that fell off a wall in my house. And I pull in the parking lot, look at my phone, and 5 minutes earlier, the Wild claimed him off waivers, and I was completely surprised. Somebody the day before asked me if I thought the Wild would take him off waivers, and I'm like, why? You know, Beckman's playing great. This guy's playing great. You know, Durer, all these guys. So I just figured it just was totally, you know, didn't have my radar up. And then the Wild take him off waivers, and, you know, right away, one, it solidified to me that obviously Duhaime was making the team. Today's guest, by the way, which we'll get to in a second. But that Beckman, Boldy, and Rossi were going to start in Iowa, and then unfortunately the next day, I believe it was, that Boldy broke his ankle. But regardless, what it showed is that no matter how great of a camp Beckman, Boldy, and Rossi had, that Billy Guerin always wanted to put these three 20-year-olds in Iowa to at least start the season. And so they grabbed the 24-year-old Rem Pitlick off waivers, a kid with a great contract, he makes less than $1 million. Pending restricted free agent, would only cost the Wild $56,000 in a waiver claim, no assets back to the Nashville Predators. They got him for free. And, you know, a lot of people in Minnesota know Rem Pitlick a lot better than me because they've watched him for years playing in Shattuck or the USHL, where he was an absolute stud, or the Gophers. I didn't see a ton of him because I get such tunnel vision with the NHL. But holy moly, can this kid fly. And just great hands, great skill. And what's really neat for me which also shows my age, I covered his dad in Florida, Lance Pitlick, for 2 years. So this is I've covered a lot of fathers and sons in the NHL, but never where the son was on the team that I was covering. And now I've covered a father and son actually in the NHL. It's pretty crazy. It's telling you I'm pretty close to having to move on to greener pastures or something. I don't know. It's a little shocking to me. But this kid is fun to watch. He's a great quote. He thinks about his answers too. Just a super intelligent kid. So it's been fun getting to know Rem and getting to cover him. And it looks like he's got a heck of a chance to be a really impactful player for this Wild team. whether it's a bottom six role or a bottom or a top six role. Like, if the Wild had any injuries in the top six, would you be scared to put Rem Pitlick there? Would you be scared to put Rem Pitlick on the power play? Like, to me, you look at him and he should be on the power play. He's got all the skill and the speed in the world. He's an offensive mind, and it's pretty neat to see. So far, the Wild season is going really well. Their power play really let them down in Vegas. I know everybody wanted to, including myself, jumped all over Matt Dumba for the turnover there at the end of the second period. He needs to have better situational awareness. You know, what makes him really good is stuff the Wild don't want to take away from his game. But there are times that you have to know that you can't do it. And I felt in Seattle, he was a much, much safer with the puck. You could see where he tried to hold back and didn't pinch in on 50-50 pucks and things like that. And that's an area with 10 seconds left in the second period that you just got to know that you can't make. It's a, you know, he's a high risk, high reward defenseman, but there's a no reward with trying to dangle with the puck at the red line with 10 seconds left in the period. What are you going to make happen? Just either dump it or give it to Brodin, where there was a clear lane. He turned the puck over, winds up being the winning goal because the Wild had a short-lived rally there in the third period and just couldn't get it done. But let's be honest, it was their power play let them down that game. They had a short 5-on-3, then a long 5-on-3, then a long 6-on-4. So essentially, three two-man advantages in that game, and they weren't able to score one night after Zuccarello and Kaprizov scored that awesome-looking 5-on-3 goal in Arizona. So that let them down, but they come back in Seattle, and Dean Evason really challenged his group, really reminded them that they were outworked by the Seattle Kraken on October 28th in Seattle, that they were out-hustled, outworked, outclassed, out-everything, and wound up blowing that early lead there in Seattle, and really, frankly, embarrassed by the expansion team. So I think these players took it to heart, because I think anybody that watches the Wild with clear eyes would agree that the one MO about this team is that they usually are the team on the ice that outworks the other team. The two areas that have been really impressive about the Wild so far in the first 14 games, where 9 of the 14 have been on the road and yet they're 10-4, which is pretty impressive, is they outwork teams and they've got incredible depth. And in Seattle, they look like a tired hockey team and got outworked and they paid for it. So what he did is he showed clips of that game in the pre-scout. No clips of the Minnesota Wild, just clips of how Seattle worked and how Seattle scored their goals against the Wild on October 28th. And what he said is it was an example to them, to show them that if they don't try to go into Saturday night's game and outwork the Kraken, they're going to do it again, because that's the MO of a lot of expansion teams, but especially the Kraken, is that they work and they work and they work. And even in the third period, we saw they don't quit. They came and worked, and the Wild had to really hold on and get some great goaltending from Cam Talbot to win that game and not ruin the perfect storyline by Rem Pitlick. So, so far so good for the season. Two-game homestand coming up here against the San Jose Sharks and Ryan Suter's return to Minnesota. Saad Youssef, our Dallas Stars writer, is actually going to be doing that big story this week for The Athletic. I did the Parisi one. We're going to get a different voice on the Ryan Suter one, and he's covered Ryan a lot, and I'm working on a bunch of different projects right now that you guys are all going to, I think, love coming up here in the future. I also got a meaty mailbag coming this week, so I want to get that done. As I mentioned, my guest today is Brandon Duham. Brandon, I think a lot of people, if you remember, I was so convinced that he would have a great chance to make the team that really my first or second training camp story was on Brandon Duham and Connor Dewar, Dewey 1 and Dewey 2, because I really wanted to introduce Wild fans to Duham, because I just knew that all training camp long, fans were going to be clamoring for Beckman, Boldy, and Rossi to make the team, and I wanted to remind them that that one of those maybe two spots, and it turned out really one spot because Rem Pitlick was picked up off on waivers, would probably go to Duham. They gave him a two-way, one-way contract in the offseason. That means that next year, if he was in Iowa, he'd make his NHL salary. So what that usually tells you is that the organization thinks that player is really, really close to making the NHL. And so you just knew that he was going to be really high up on their depth chart to have a chance to make the team. Then he comes into training camp, and the first practice, he's on the line with Nico Sturm and Nick Bjugstad. He was the only, Victor Rask wasn't even on a regular line. So he was the only one of their prospect hopefuls that were vying for a roster spot that was on an NHL line to start camp. And he was on that line for 3 or 4 days. Then they gave some other guys some looks there, but they always got back to Doohan. And he scored some awesome goals in both practices and exhibition season. He could fly. He's physical. He's got an NHL body. He has an NHL mind. He just plays an NHL brand of hockey. And he is turning out to be a heck of a find for this team. You know, a mid-round draft pick, drafted in the fourth round in 2016, 24 years old, played his 3 full years at Providence College after growing up in South Florida and leaving at 14 years old for British Columbia with his dad. His dad had to leave his wife and his daughter behind in South Florida. And because Brandon was so young, his dad flew with him to British Columbia for 2 years. They actually billeted other kids as well. His dad got odd jobs there to work. And then eventually when he was 16, Brandon stayed there for 1 year and eventually wound up playing in the BCHL and then the USHL. And what are the chances? He wound up line mate with Nico Sturm with the Clark Cup champion Tri-City Storm in 2016, and that was the year he also committed to Providence, and that was the year the Wild also drafted him. So 2016 will be a dreamy year for the rest of Brandon Newham's life. But you're in here today, you know, great kid. You know, obviously everybody knows that I covered the Florida Panthers forever there. So it just, you know, it really makes me, it just uplifts me that so many kids from South Florida during the times that they were born when I was covering that team are now in the NHL. We saw the story that I did last week with Jacob Chychrun and Brandon Duhame. But, you know, Andrew Peters is in the NHL. Gostabir, you know, Chase Prisky made his NHL debut for the Florida Panthers last week as well. It's just pretty neat that we're starting to see that all pay off. Austin Matthews coming up from Arizona. We've seen a lot of kids from California or Vegas, in Jason Zucker's case, make it to the NHL. So it's just pretty neat, all these non-traditional markets and all them making the team. You know, the other thing I think about Brandon is I know exactly where he lives in South Florida. It's a community right there on the border of Parkland and Coral Springs. I have a lot of friends that live in there. I've been in that community a million times. It's right on the outskirts of Stoneman Douglas High School. That's where Brandon's sister Naomi went to high school. That's where he would have gone to high school if he didn't leave for British Columbia. And I just always think of that because of the school shooting that happened at that school. You know, I basically grew up going to that school as well. I started off as a teenager, a high school writer for the Sun Sentinel in South Florida. That's how I got my career started. And I used to cover a bunch of sporting events, both in Palm Beach County, Boca Raton, Lantana, Lake Worth, Del Rey, West Palm. But I also went into the northern parts of Broward a lot, you know, Deerfield Beach and Parkland and Carl Springs, and I covered just a ton of games at Douglas High School, Taravella High School, Carl Springs High School. And so I've been in that high school a bunch, and I just always think about that school shooting all the time. And every time I drive by it, I think of it because I always coincidentally, whenever I'm in South Florida, have on my list to stop at, I don't want to say the name of the community, but the community that Brandon Duhame lives in. And it's just, I mean, you know, you go out on the road and there's Douglas High School, you know, right around the corner. And so just, I always think about that. And I know it affected Brandon, even though he was not there at the school and was in college at the time. You know, I know that the family knew a lot of the families that were affected by the shooting and things like that. So Brandon is a fascinating kid, as you're about to find out. I think we'll be writing a lot about him over the years here, because the Wild finally, as I've long petitioned, have drafted and developed a bottom six forward. And I'm not pigeonholing him there. He could play in the top six eventually. I think he's got the sky's the limit for his ability and what he could do in his career. But how many times have I, you know, ripped on the Wild for not allocating their money in proper ways? They go out and they always sign these guys to 3 and 4 year deals at $3 or $4 million to put in bottom six roles, when to me that's what Iowa should be for, is giving those guys a chance. And and I think Brandon Duhame is going to be a great inspiration to a lot of those guys in Iowa that think, well, I'm not a top prospect, so how am I ever going to get to the show? You know, like, do you think that Connor Durer, now a good friend of Brandon Duhame, doesn't look at Brandon as now the guy like, wow, I could do this too? And I just think it's really, really cool. So without further ado, let's get to Brandon Duhame. But here's a word from some of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So I've already humiliated myself to start this podcast. I didn't hit record. So we're about 5 minutes in and I'm like, Brandon, you're going to kill me. I got to start this up. So Brandon's already seen why I'm a sports writer and not a multimedia superstar. So again, welcome to Brandon Duham, my fellow Floridian, although I'm technically born in New York and I only claim Florida when it's convenient for me. And this week it is convenient for me because we are going down there on Friday. You have two games before that, Brandon. I can't believe we're doing this again. But your parents have reserved an entire section for your first ever game in Florida. How special will that be?
Yeah, that'll be really special. You know, it'll be awesome for friends and family. I think it's a really big deal for them. And, you know, being from South Florida and, you know, how it's not the biggest hockey community. And, you know, it was just really awesome. They made a lot of sacrifices for me throughout my career. And it'll be a really special night.
And you have a couple home games coming up before then, and then you get to play in a building where you said you played about a minute and a half in the intermissions, you know, one day when you were like 5 years old. You grew up a stone's throw from Incredible Ice, where the Panthers, I forget what they even call it now, but that's their practice facility. Panthers Ice Den, right. Jeff Campbell, yeah. Yeah, Jeff Campbell, I think, still runs it or used to. So that had to be cool. You live in a community that had a ton of Panthers players, still probably do, that live there. I won't say the name of the community, but I mean, it had to be pretty neat every day you're waking up and there's Olioka, there's Roberto Luongo, there's Thomas Vokoun, whoever.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. You know, when I was little, I'd skate, rollerblade, whatever, sticking around the neighborhood, and then sometimes I'd see, you know, hockey sticks in the trash can outside, and that's kind of how I knew if there was hockey players living there or not. So yeah, there was a few that kind of came in and out throughout, you know, when I was living there, and you know, it was pretty cool to be able to play street hockey with their kids, or you know, being from South Florida, it's pretty rare to find a street hockey game, but there was always one going on in my neighborhood, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it reminds me, when I was a kid growing up on Long Island, we lived in a community, or I went to school in a community that was right next to where the Islanders used to come home, and we'd sneak out and see like Brian Trottier come back and Denny Potvin and Clark Gillies and all those guys, and I imagine it's the same thing for you. It has to be pretty neat that you have so many of your fellow Floridians now in the league. You played against your buddy Jacob Chychrun the other day. We've seen Prisky, it's Jace Prisky, right? Played for the Panthers, made his NHL debut last week. Andrew Peters, who's on your team, you played against the Ghost the other day, Gostisbehere. I mean, it just shows you. Austin Matthews from Arizona, Jason Zucker, born in California, grew up in Vegas. We're starting to see these non-traditional hockey markets that have produced these players that are playing in the NHL now.
Yeah, I think I think a big part of it is, you know, the weather that Florida gets is, you know, guys go down there for a little bit and they love it. So then they end up retiring down there and, you know, they have kids, and then now they're, South Florida's becoming a hockey-bed of, you know, players, and I think it's only growing.
Your dad, Trevor, and your mom, Martine, they grew up in Canada and Quebec, right? But your dad played professionally, but never in Florida. So how did you guys wind up settling down in South Florida?
My mom ended up opening up a small business down there, and then it kind of fell through in the first year, but they ended up loving the lifestyle, loving the area. So they ended up staying, and they found work down there. So they've been there ever since.
Now, the Panthers, they haven't won a playoff round since you've been alive. The Heat have won championships. The Marlins have won championships. The Dolphins, well, they're the Dolphins. How did hockey become your thing? I know that your dad played, but why did you fall in love with that and not some of the other traditional South Florida sports?
Yeah, growing up, that was kind of the only way my parents got me to sit still, was bringing me to my dad's men's league games. And, you know, I was 2 years old and I'd be sitting there watching him play. And then the last like 5 minutes of the skate, they bring me out, put me on a pair of skates, and, you know, I'd skate around for that last 5 minutes and fell in love instantly. I grew up playing a little bit of lacrosse in middle school too. That was fun. I liked that a lot, but, you know, it came time where I had to kind of balance out the two, and I went with hockey. So it was an easy choice for me. That was my passion from a young age.
So the other thing that I think is really cool is Jeff Chychrun, somebody I've gotten used to knowing and all over the years, played professionally. He's playing in this senior men's league as well, and sees this guy in a yellow helmet, says, wow, he's really good, in a time in Florida where there wasn't a lot of great players. And it turns out a couple years later, that coach that he winds up co-coaching with is Trevor Duhame, and he starts coaching you, Peters, and little Jacob.
Yeah, that I mean, that picture is iconic. I mean, yeah, the South Florida minor, or like a Adam team or whatever it was. You know, we were 4 or 5 years old, and to have three of us make it, you know, out of that, it's, you know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And Andrew has turned into a regular for the Blue Jackets too. And he is actually somebody that you're really, really close with, right?
Yeah. So he's my best friend from back home. He's awesome. You know, we've been training together for the past 4 or 5 summers, and you know, he's a guy that's committed to getting better every summer. And, you know, I think we rub off on each other pretty good there, and you know, help each other improve over the summers.
Where do you train there? Pretty much, it's obviously you skate at incredible ice, but you work out with a trainer.
Yeah. So it's called Barnwest Methods. It's in Deerfield Beach, and it opened up probably 3 years ago. It's a giant facility, and you know, they do an awesome job of, you know, working us out, and they'll do some on ice stuff too. And then my on ice trainer, Anthony Pedicaro, I've been with him for the past probably 6 or 7 years too. Mm-hmm. Ever since I started playing junior, he moved down to Florida. And then once he did, you know, we've been together every summer since.
So you start in the Junior Panthers programs, you guys do really well down there. And eventually you start going to Astera, Florida, which is across Alligator Alley, south on the Sawgrass Highway. It's a 140 mile drive. You're doing this every weekend, right?
Yeah. So we'd leave, it was either Friday night or Saturday morning or whatever it was. We'd have 2 practices on Saturday of 2 hours each, and then 1 practice on Sunday, 2 hours, and then we'd drive home after that. But yeah, that Junior Panthers team was a situation where we had 5 or 6 good players, and then we'd go up north, not do too well, and then there was a team in Tampa that had 5 or 6 good players, and then, you know, we kind of met in the middle, and they drove down 1.5 hours. We drive over 1.5 hours, and then we ended up having a pretty good team there.
Yeah, the Junior Everblades. Panthers used to play exhibition games there in Astero, there at the arena there. Really nice arena all the time. And and Jacob was telling me that you guys used to really create some havoc at the Embassy Suites there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every trip, you know, that was probably what we looked forward to the most was, you know, we get through practice, and then we'd have the real game at night of mini sticks in the hotel. So it was pretty fun.
One thing I'll have to get my hands on one of these days, maybe next Jacob Chikrin and Brandon Duhame feature, is Jacob said that there was a team mom that has all these videos of all you guys.
I'm sure, as somebody's kids probably got them stuffed away there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. And your mom basically ran the team, right? She was almost like the manager.
Yeah. Essentially there was a couple moms that would help out with that, but she, for the most part, was taking care of the paperwork and all the stuff like that. So
now let's fast forward. You're 14. Jacob is 13. And now you start to realize, like, I really want to do this. This is something I'm good at. But to do it, I probably have to leave South Florida. What was that first conversation like with your parents, and how hard of a decision was as a 14-year-old, probably about to go to Douglas High School right there in your backyard? Yeah. What was it like to say, you know what, I need to find somewhere else to go?
For me, it was easy. I wasn't really thinking about, you know, the kind of sacrifices that everyone else had to make. It was more, you know, oh, you want to go play more hockey? And I was, of course I would. But you know, looking back at it now, there was so many moving parts to it where, you know, my dad had to move with me, leave the family behind. And, my mom obviously had to let us go, let her, you know, 14-year-old kid leave for basically the whole year and come back for summer. So that was really, looking back at it now, that was a giant sacrifice, but when I was, you know, that age, I wasn't really thinking too much into it. So it was awesome.
And you go up to, how do you find Pursuit of Excellence in BC as opposed to so many other prep schools in the Northeast, like South Kent and some of those type of places?
Yeah, I wasn't really interested in the traditional prep school where, you know, we had toured a couple schools. Whenever we'd have tournaments up there, we'd go to a bunch of prep schools and take a look. And the coaching staff at the time was kind of pushing prep schools on us. And I wasn't really a big fan of how they had, you know, like the 4-month season. You know, NMH was one of the schools we toured, and they had an outdoor rink. Mm-hmm. So the ice was only available for 3 or 4 months or whatever it was. So I wasn't interested in that. And when I told my parents I didn't want to go to a prep school, they kind of did a little more research, and then someone recommended Pursuit of Excellence to us to go take a look. So we went up there for a week and kind of did the day in the life type deal. And after that, you know, I kind of fell in love with it. It was, you know, you wake up early, you'd have a 2-hour ice session, an hour workout, hour skill session. And then whether we had video that day, it all depended. But We'd go to school for two and a half hours. So I kind of fell in love with that. So yeah, it was, you know, it was awesome.
Yeah. And so as you said, your dad goes with you. He doesn't have a job. He's doesn't have a place. And next thing you know, he's getting odd jobs and he winds up billeting kids on your team. Like, how'd that all happen?
It was crazy. Looking back at it, like I said, you know, we flew into Seattle the first day or the first time we flew up there. We bought a minivan right on the spot. We went to this, you know, crappy dealership right nearby, bought a minivan, drove up to Kelowna, no place, nothing. Kind of did some research, found a place, and then, you know, there's a couple extra rooms, so we took on two kids. One from Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories.
Wow.
And I think it was Edmonton, Alberta, it was in Edmonton, was the other billet kid. So we were kind of all areas of the map, which was pretty much a culture shock for everyone. I was moving to British Columbia and the kid from Yellowknife was moving down to British Columbia. Like, it was, we were from all edges of the map. It was awesome.
Your dad did like construction jobs and bartending and things like that?
Yeah, no, he did restoration.
Okay.
He was into restoration for 2 years, and then when he moved back, he came back to his regular job.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah. I'm sure your mom and sister are excited to see him back. And then you stayed there another year, wind up playing briefly in the BCHL. Then you go the North American Junior route, played in the USHL, started with Chicago Steel, eventually traded Tri-City, win a Clark Cup with Nico Sturm, recruited and committed to Providence, and drafted by the Wild. So 2016 has got to be probably the year of Brandon Duham.
Yeah, that was an awesome year. from my BCHL year when I was 17, I had, you know, a pretty solid year. It wasn't anything crazy. Didn't put up any crazy numbers. So it was a little bit of a risk to go to the USHL when I was drafted there. I kind of told the teams, oh, I'm thinking about going back to the BCHL. You know, I feel comfortable there. And my mom was actually, my mom and dad were the ones that kind of pushed me and say, you know, the USHL is the better league, the better route. My agent was also, you know, influencing me to go to the USHL. Mm-hmm. So I went out to the camp and ended up having a really good camp. And, you know, they told me I'd be on the team. So I took the risk to go to the USHL. And, you know, it kind of worked out from there, where I had a pretty good line, pretty good season in Chicago. And then when the trade deadline came, Chicago was out. So they kind of asked me, because I was in high school, they asked me if I was willing to get traded and, you know, go the playoff route. And again, I was a little hesitant. You know, I felt comfortable in Chicago. I liked it there. But again, my support system was, you know, they were saying it is a good idea for you to go, you know, get more games, get more exposure type deal, and really grow your game, a playoff game. So, you know, took the risk, went to Tri-City, and, you know, it panned out.
Yeah. When you're in that position, I mean, look, I'm sure from the moment you started to get on skates, you're like, I want to play in the NHL. When you go to Pursuit of Excellence, I want to play in the NHL. Juniors NHL, Providence NHL, even Iowa NHL. How far off is, like, how proud are you that dream became a reality? A kid from South Florida, but even a minor leaguer in Iowa, we've seen hundreds over the years that never get to this point, yet you did. It's got to be pretty prideful.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm definitely proud of it, but you know, I don't, like, I've said it before, I don't want to kind of sit here and get fat and happy, say, oh, I made it for now. You know, I want to be in this league for a long time, and I want to, you know, try to make an impact and help this hockey team win. So, that, you know, that's what drives me every day is, you know, trying to help this team.
Right. Have you been to Pizza Time in Carl Springs?
Yeah.
You know who owns that, right?
It's Luongo, right?
Yeah, Luongo's. Yeah. Well, at least it used to be Luongo's before his girlfriend.
It used to be
his girlfriend's dad. Now it's his father-in-law. Mm-hmm. And we used to cover training camp at Incredible Ice, and then we go over there and never got a bill. Like, the father never gave us a bill. I forget his first name. Well, but just a great guy, great place. Yeah. So if you're in South Florida on this Wild trip, got to check out Pizza Time. Do you if like a Wild fan is going to South Florida, which I'm sure there are going to be plenty, do you have any restaurants or anything must-dos that they got to do, whether it's in Carl Springs, Fort Lauderdale, whatever?
There's a couple spots that I'm a regular at. It's called Moon Tie in Coral Springs. It's probably 15-20 minutes from the arena. It's a good little sushi spot that I like going to. Other than that, it's a lot of chains down there. Not a lot of family-owned stuff. So whenever a family-owned spot comes out, I try to to visit those and, you know, kind of test everything out.
Yeah, I'm going to a place called Anthony's 84 on a Friday night. It's right on State Road 84 by the arena. By the airport. It's unbelievable Italian food.
Anthony Coal Fire Pizza, is it called?
No, Anthony's 84, it's called. It's basically like they have these booths that look like cockpits, essentially. It's pretty neat. I hear that your mom is really good at jumping on jet skis.
Oh, God. Is that what she's telling you?
I can't reveal my sources, but I've heard this. She's,
yeah. Those are a lot of fun. You know, my family bought those jet skis last year, and they also got a house in the Keys to, you know, they've been renting it out and stuff, and they're using it as like a real estate option, but we'll get to go there every couple weekends and in the summertime. So that's a lot of fun. And she's probably telling you lies, but yeah.
I take it she's not very good at jumping on large jet skis.
Yeah.
Lastly, Brandon, if you don't mind, I'll throw you some questions from Wild fans. Daniel asks, what hockey city are you looking forward to playing that you haven't been to yet?
Coral Springs for sure.
Yeah. So Florida. Any others besides that you're like, you know, Madison Square Garden or something like that, Montreal?
Cool. That's probably my other one.
That'd be awesome. Let's see. Here's a great one from Daniel too. What NHL perks are you most enjoying compared to the AHL?
Probably the food. the chefs and all that, and you know, sitting on the plane having a steak. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. First class charter is probably better than the bus in Iowa, right?
For sure.
That has to be the hardest part. I mean, even I sometimes think of these assistant coaches like Alex Tangay on the bus.
Yeah, after we used being to give him a hard time.
No wonder he's like now an assistant coach in Detroit. He's like, I've had enough of this.
Yeah. He made a lot of money in his career, and he was sitting on the bus with us. So that was we'd always give him a hard time. But I kind of liked the bus. We had the bunks there, and you know, we kind of all lay back, and it ended up being a pretty good time.
Kim asks, after playing in the NHL now for 14 games, what is one area of the game that you most want to improve?
Consistency, I think. And I think that's the hardest thing for me to accept is you're not going to have your best game every game, and your bad games still have to be good. And that's the hardest thing for me mentally is sitting there and after a game and saying, oh, that wasn't my best game. And, you know, it's something that I want to improve, and consistency is probably the biggest thing.
How much do you think those not best games is due to ice time? Like, it cannot be hard to just sit there sometimes on the bench getting limited ice time, and then all of a sudden, Duhaim, you're up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I don't really want to make excuses, but you know, getting in the flow of the game is definitely important. And and even, you know, if you're not getting those shifts, you have to stay ready on the bench. And I think a big thing is, you know, maybe staying vocal and, you know, being kind of keeping that emotion on the bench for, you know, staying warm or whatever it is, and trying to be the best teammate that you possibly be.
Ben asks, how much are you looking forward to matching your skating ability against guys like McDavid and McKinnon? You know, let me ask it this way. I mean, you know, skating is your forte. How did that develop?
I think those, you know, it's a big credit to the off seasons and, you know, pursuit of excellence. Actually, the hockey program I went to in British Columbia, the biggest thing was skating. And, you know, we do 2 hours of power skating every week, which was, that was big. And, you know, getting the fundamentals down at a young age like that is really important. And then the strength training along with it was also really important. And I think that carried on into my summers, and that mentality of, you know, working on skating and working on that explosive part of it was a big part.
A couple more minutes with Brandon Duhaim. I've already gone over the 20 minutes I promised him. A lot of it's due to technical difficulties. One, I forgot to turn on record. And the other, we had an alarm go off in the middle of the podcast as well. Connor asks, what is one area that you think you could provide the most value to this team? I mean, the one thing is fair is that you don't want to be relegated to forever being a fourth line guy. I'm sure that you want to slowly but surely bite off more and more responsibility. We've seen it with Ryan Hartman this year. It took him 5, 6, 7 years in the league, fourth liner, third liner. Now he's leading the team in scoring.
Yeah. I definitely want to move up the ladder, and I think any competitor would, but, you know, wherever the team needs me at that point in time is the role that I'm absolutely willing to play, whether that's, you know, on the fourth line, eight to 12 minutes a night. I'm going to do my best to chip in that aspect, or if it's, you know, a top six role, that would be, you know, you'd have to bring it every night. And as long as this team's winning and, you know, I'm trying to help out, I think I think that's really important.
And Maverick, that answers your question as well. Bryce says, who did you idolize most growing up, and what current player do you look forward to playing?
I loved watching the superstars when I was a kid, and mm-hmm. I think a lot of kids do. And you know, when you're young, you like watching the superstars saying, I'm gonna be like him. But you know, you grow older, and then you kind of see players that you want to emulate. I don't think there's anyone in particular. I think I like taking bits and parts from a lot mm-hmm. of people's games, whether it's their skating or whether it's their skill set. You know, yeah. I think taking little things from everyone is important.
Who's your favorite Panther player growing up?
Ole Jokinen.
Yeah,
he was my guy.
He's a guy that, I mean, he went from almost being out of the league to suddenly overnight becoming a 30 goal scorer down there. And the year they had the Auster game, and he was a stud in the Auster game. I was really mm-hmm. close with him.
Yeah, I think Barkov just broke his records. Right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Hopefully that franchise, the way that they're playing right now, will be sort of the next big mm-hmm. thing here. I think it's being awesome for that market. I mentioned that you I know your sister went to Douglas High School, and you were in college when the shooting happened. How did it affect you? Did you know any of the families that were, I know your family did, some of the families affected, but how did that, when you drive by it every day and see that school?
Just a senseless tragedy. It was really tough. I remember where I was when, you know, I kind of found out the news, and I didn't know anyone that was in the school really personally. I mean, I knew my neighbor, you know, just kind of younger kids that were in that school, and, you know, I kind of worried for them. And I later found out that my neighbor was actually in the building at the time. So that was, you know, he was pretty traumatized from that, and ended up moving and plays a hockey player too. So, you know, we had that relationship too. And, it was just, you know, it was real sad. And, I'd love to kind of support that community as best I can, and, you know, try to help out.
Yeah. Brandon, somebody has a funny question. A beard guy asks, do you have a best Florida man experience?
the whole Florida man. Yeah, you type it in on Google or whatever. I don't know any at the top of my head, but I, you know, it's one click away on the internet. You can find 100 funny stories of Florida man. So
yeah. Well, last question, Tony asks, your favorite teammate of your career.
Favorite teammate. I mean, I like them all, but I can't pin one, I don't think. Maybe some of my some of the buddies that I grew up with, you know, a guy like Jake, or, you know, a guy that we grew up playing together real young and grew up together and kind of went through the systems too. So, you know, someone like that.
You did have some shifts against Jacob the other night. Did you guys have any funny moments or conversations on the ice?
I don't think anything like that. I think he was pretty logged in, and so was I. So, I might've finished a check on him at some point. Maybe took it a little easier, but... Or maybe a little harder. Who knows?
Did you, while Florida, I mean, did you grow up playing for guys like Jokinen or Peter Worrell or any of those, have any experiences with their, I know that Peter coaches down there, and Ole and Vokun and Dvorak had that one camp and their team.
I've done Ole Jokinen's camp back in the day. He kind of said, come out to skate. And, that was 4 or 5 years ago, and I haven't really seen him since around the rink. But Pete Worrell, he was running hockey camps this summer, so I went out there and I kind of did the instructor thing for him. So I talked to him all summer, so that was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Peter's a great guy. Yeah, hilarious guy too. Giant.
You wouldn't understand how big he is until you see him.
Brandon, I'm telling you, I covered a couple tough guys in mm-hmm. Florida. Paul Laws and Peter Worrell, the two toughest I've ever covered in this league. Yeah. Derek Bugard as well, but mm-hmm. Peter Worrell made people scared on the ice. He and there was nothing better when he scored a goal. Because he didn't even celebrate. And you'd go to him after the game, like, why? He goes, you have to act like you did it before. You know, like, it was just
that's awesome.
Just a great guy. Hey Brandon, really appreciate it. Also appreciate you not rolling your eyes and getting all angry, at least outwardly, when I said to you 4 minutes in, you're not gonna believe this, I didn't hit record.
All good.
So it lit up like it was on, but it definitely wasn't on. Brandon, thanks a lot. Good luck tomorrow night against the San Jose Sharks, and your first game on Saturday night at your old stomping ground in South Florida. And here's a word from one of our sponsors. Well, my thanks to Brandon Duhaime for joining me today on Straight from the Source. Just a great, great kid, and it's been fun to watch him his first month and a half in the NHL season. Long career ahead of him. Lots of podcasts throughout our network here at The Athletic. Justin Falk, the great Minnesotan, not the former Wild defenseman. This is the St. Louis Blues defenseman. He joins Sean Gentile and guest co-host Jeremy Rutherford, our Athletic St. Louis beat writer, this week on the Athletic Hockey Show USA, and Rob Pizzo from CBC Sports and Jesse Granger and Sarah Sivian have the Athletic Hockey Show Wednesday at the Athletic. Thanks for listening to Straight from the Source. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to leave a rating and review. Subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. You can start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents a month after that. Less than a dollar. How about that? And right now, get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/straight from the source. Talk to you next week, everybody.